Yes, how beautiful. Thank you. Actually, before I get started with the message for today, I wanted to say a couple things. One, today's the first day I'm wearing my stole since my ordination. And Jane, the maker of the stole, is back there for the first time. Yeah, she wasn't here for the ordination because she's been with her daughter up in Illinois. So yes, it's the first time seeing it. So first, not in your order of service, I want to do a reading from Father Gregory Boyle, who's a Catholic priest in the projects of L.A. Once the homeless began to sleep in the church at night, there was always the faintest evidence that they had. Come Sunday morning, we'd foo-foo the place as best we could. We'd sprinkle I love my carpet on the rugs and vacuum like crazy. We'd strategically place potpourri and air wick around the church to combat this lingering, pervasive reminder that nearly 50, and later up to 100, men had spent the night there. About the only time we used incense at the Dolores Mission Church was on Sunday morning before the 7:30 a.m. Mass crowd would arrive. Still, try as we might, the smell remained. The grumbling set in, and people spoke of churching elsewhere. It was about this time that a man drove by the church and stopped to talk to me. He was Latino, in a nice car, and had arrived at some comfortable life and living. He knew I was the pastor, and he waxed nostalgic about having grown up in the project and pointed to the church and said that he'd been baptized and made his first communion there. Then he takes in the scene around him. Gang members we had been working with were gathered by the bell tower. Homeless men and women being fed in great numbers in the parking lot. Folks arriving for the AA and the NA meeting and the ESL classes. It's a who's who of everybody who was nobody. Drug addicts, gang members, homeless, undocumented. This man sees this and shakes his head, determined and disgusted, as if to say, tisk, tisk. You know, he says, this used to be a church. I say, you know, most people around here think it's finally a church. Father Greg Boyle. This evening, we, in beloved communion with our Muslim friends of the Roswell Community Masjid, will be sheltering homeless families under our roof. This evening, thank you. Thank you. With this work, we are most definitely a church. We are most definitely a church. That I know. It won't be perfect. We'll mess up. We'll forget things. People will be inconvenienced. However, let's assume the best of intentions for all of us. Let's assume the best of intentions. Let's assume that people are trying to do their best. It might not be your version of the best, but it's their version of the best. Because people do forget, mess up, forget things. The final idea of our church's mission statement, talks about search for justice both within our walls and beyond. Let us not forget, with this work, we are living our mission in a most unique way. A most unique way. Because we are enacting justice by bringing those beyond our walls within. And what a blessing for us. What a blessing for us. So again, thank you. That wasn't the sermon. Christians believe that Jesus was the Son of God, human form, who died for the sins of humanity and was resurrected on the third day. Or not. I mean, some Christians literally believe that Jesus was the Son of God, who was made human, died for the sins of humanity, and was raised on the third day. Yet some Christians only believe parts of this, metaphorically, actually. But we can say that this man, Jesus, who outside of the accepted canonical Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that were written between 50 and 100 years after his death, that this man, Jesus, who left no paper trail, nothing written in his own hand, and his only mention in recorded history is in a few sidebar notes that you could probably count on just a few fingers on one of your hands. But we can say that despite all this, that this man Jesus has had and continues to have a profound effect on world history. After his death, several groups of people began sharing stories about the unique ministry of this man, Jesus. And as time passed, these stories diverged into different threads of belief, meaning, and significance. Now, the Roman authorities of the time, they wanted a unified pagan religion, and they repressed, persecuted, and killed many of the early Christians. As the Roman Emperor Constantine ascended to the throne of the Roman Empire, he only had to eliminate 7 of his rivals for the throne, which he did. But as he ascended to the throne, he saw something, at least many historians say, that he saw something in a particular thread of Christianity that he felt could be useful. In this particular thread, there were people known as bishops who were appointed as bishops of certain towns who could leverage their power through the priesthood, priests, and the laity. And that all these bishops reported to the Bishop of Rome, known as the Pope. So Constantine saw this kind of organization, according to some historians, not all, and said this could be put to good use in his Roman Empire. And in the year 313, Emperor Constantine allowed freedom of worship among this thread of Christianity. But then he soon realized that there were all these other threads also around who were completely different forms of Christianity. And so he convened in the year 325 the Council of Nicaea, where everybody got together. And out of this council and some subsequent councils over the next several years, what came out of these councils was known as Christian Orthodoxy. Right belief, right Christian belief. And if your particular belief didn't coincide with what came out of Christian orthodoxy, you were thought to be one who believes wrongly. A heretic. That's what a heretic is. Radical Christian theologian Matthew Fox says, if you're going to run an empire, the Orthodox Christian concept of original sin is a very useful idea. Because it keeps your subjects confused about whether or not they even have a right to exist. So the point of this little history lesson is that what it means to be an Orthodox Christian was something that was defined by people under a specific time and circumstance. If the people, the time, or the circumstances were different, Christian orthodoxy might be different. In the Unitarian Universalist tradition, our tradition springs from what we call our 6 sources. And it's nice to review them every now and then, and we're going to do that right now. They're in no particular order. But 1, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to the renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. So that's 1, direct experience. 2, words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. That's 2. words of prophetic women and men. Number three, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. That's number three, world religions. Four, humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against the idolatries of the mind and the spirit. That's number four, humanist ideas, science, reason. Number five, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life, instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. That's five, earth-centered traditions. And number six, Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. That's number six, Jewish and Christian teachings. Those are our six sources to Unitarian Universalism. Unitarian Universalist theologian James Luther Adams called our tradition a living tradition because our faith depends on the principle that revelation is continuous. Our religious tradition is a living tradition because we are always learning new truths. So continuous revelation means that revelation isn't something that only happened in the past. That revelation isn't something that just is in a book, never to be made manifest in our lives or in our world. So some Christians today believe that if you only have faith, faith alone, that Jesus was the Son of God, made human, who died for the sins of humanity and was resurrected on the third day, if you only had faith in that, and nothing else, you would be ensured salvation and sit at the right hand of God in heaven. To me, that's a very fundamentalist definition of Christianity. Because you have to believe that in its entirety. If you leave anything out or add anything, it's different. It's a fundamentalist definition. I view fundamentalism on any topic is when a definition of something gets reduced to a binary. It's good or bad, Christian or not. Right, wrong, black, white. There's no room in fundamental, no room for many shades of gray. Am I even allowed to say shades of gray anymore? I don't know. You say 50 Shades of Grey and now your sermon is down a back alley. All right. But let's say, so that's how fundamentalism means to me. So let's say you were raised in a Christian denomination, somewhat maybe even liberal, and that you were told when you kind of colored outside the orthodox lines that you might be putting your salvation in jeopardy. And then when they admonished you about it, you kind of felt bad about yourself, like you were wrong. Like they were all right, and what's wrong with me? Because when, in your heart, you didn't see that orthodoxy match with the ministry of Jesus or with your experience of the world. So maybe you said to yourself, I guess I'm not a Christian, and you left all that behind. And that was years ago. And with the rise of fundamentalism, which further moved, maybe for you, Christianity to be a binary, and when you see that, when your coloring outside of the lines doesn't just maybe threaten your salvation or belief, but actually condemns your salvation and belief with that fundamentalism, now you're thinking, I know I'm not a Christian. And it's not even in your rearview mirror anymore. In Unitarian Universalism, we allow you to color outside the lines that your denomination of your past has set for you. You can paint with your colors, the colors on your palette, on your canvas, in any way you like. It's a living tradition where revelation is continuous. It's ongoing. It's unbounded. There's no need to express anything in binaries. We don't define, encircle, restrict, or confine the boundaries of our faith. If you feel comfortable answering, I'd like a show of hands of anyone who was either raised as a Christian or who regularly attended a Christian church or was affiliated with a Christian denomination. Anybody? Wow. That's almost everybody. Okay. Thank you for at least having the courage to raise your hand, and really thank you for having the courage to move on to something that is more aligned with you or something that was speaking your language. Just as we use, don't ask you to restrict your living faith. I'm going to ask you not to allow them, the Christian denomination of your past, I'm going to ask you not to allow them to define Christianity for you. Don't let their definition of Christianity confine you in their little orthodox prison. Again, orthodoxy, right belief, fundamentalism, these binaries, all of those things were invented by people. People. And I'm going to ask you not to look at Christianity as a binary, but as a continuum. It's not a destination, it's a path of its own. It's not orthodoxy, it's a continuously revealed piece of art. A masterpiece of your faith story, painted using your colors from your palette on your canvas. Let it be that. Might your now permissible, outside the lines painting about Jesus provide new meaning to your life? Might it allow you to bring back the beauty of Jesus that maybe you left behind long ago? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. But let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. Just as you did it for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me. Love one another. As I have loved you, you must love one another. Reverend Kathleen Rollins, who delivered my ordination sermon, describes herself as a Christian UU. She says, "For me, my prayer is to understand Jesus and to live in such a way to make his life a living testimony that comes alive in me every day. And in that way, he is resurrection. And therefore, I can say, I believe in the resurrection." Now, while attending religious education in her youth of a mainline Christian denomination, she would routinely question her RE teachers about miracles, virgin birth, resurrection, to the point where her teacher said, "We don't want you to come back." And she takes pride at being expelled from Sunday school. Christian theologian Matthew Fox, who I quoted earlier, was expelled from the Catholic priesthood by Pope John Paul II. He didn't take it personally. In fact, he said, "I wear it as a badge of honor to have been silenced by people like that. And besides, there are worse fates than having the vow of celibacy ripped away from you." Thank you, John Paul II. But these are two examples of people who are coloring outside the lines. But rather than abandon the faith, they abandoned the orthodoxy that sought to define their faith. They abandoned the orthodoxy, and they kept their faith. That's a beautiful thing. So what can the ministry of Jesus teach us? It can teach us to find the meaning of faith not in a book, but in your hearts. To find the meaning of true duty and justice, not necessarily in the masses, but in a single lost lamb. To find the meaning of riches, not in money, love of money and comfort, but in love for others. To find the meaning of salvation, not in a supersized world, but in the tiniest of mustard seeds. To find the meaning of success, not by serving only those who can help you rise through the corporate ladder, but by serving the least of your brothers and sisters. To find the meaning of humility in leadership, not by being served, but by being of service. If you were never a Christian and were never able to get past the fundamentalism, to even attempt to understand Jesus, or if your Christianity has been taken from you by orthodoxy, let the claiming or reclaiming of this man Jesus be an act of justice. He's yours. He's not theirs. May the revelation of this man Jesus, in all his gentleness, kindness, and mercy, may that revelation be continuous in your life. May his transformative ministry, focused on the other, the poor, the outcast, the dispossessed, the invisible, the forgotten, the homeless, a who's who of everybody who was nobody, let that be resurrected in your deeds and actions each and every day. And as Christian fiction writer Wanda Brunstetter says, remember, as you go about your day, you may be the only Jesus that some of your friends, neighbors, and family will ever see.